It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we're Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, right over there. Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and if you can't listen to our show live overnight on one of our great radio stations, you can listen right on your phone. All right. By the way, you and I were just talking about it because we were hacking and wheezing. I saw that the ragweed pollen's really hitting our area now. So
Yeah. I've been struggling to breathe for a little over a week now, which is why I was off Thursday night, Friday morning, then trying to regain that. And then tonight I was like, okay, I think I can, as I'm tapering off the other meds, I can get back on my regimen of my one allergy pill that I take. And I started taking it again because I was like, and we don't really have much of, it's, I guess, fall weather for Texas and cooler by comparison that where we've been. But overnight lows, as low as the mid-50s, but typically in the 60s right now. But the dry air and then the, you know, the allergens in the air, as you mentioned, man, I go crazy in the fall. And I'm prone to pneumonia. I've had it several times in my life. So I just have to be careful about it. And, seriously, thinking about putting a mask on again. I was actually working, when was this? This goes back a few weeks. And I put a mask on because I was spraying insecticide in my lawn. And so I put a mask on. And I was like, okay, I have about a 2 to 3 minute time limit on that type of mask that I was wearing, which I always wear it with gloves and eye protection. Remember, at Red Eye Radio, safety is third. I hadn't worn a mask in a while. I went to my doctor, and I wore one in the office. By the way, did you see the CDC recommendation change on wearing a mask in every medical setting?
Oh yeah,
and all of that, and
they took it off. Right?
It just. It was just, you know, it was like nothing in the media, but you still have a number of people out there that go crazy if you talk about, yeah, it's okay to take the mask off. If anybody says, and they just go into it full on. There were two different reporters from the New York Times yesterday. One had posted a piece on something about COVID. And the other one just, well, this is irresponsible. How dare you post this? People are dying still from COVID. And it was like, okay, calm down. Nobody is condoning people dying, but we're pretty much done with COVID protocol. Doesn't mean you can't wear a mask. I mean, it really is, we're at the point.
Yeah, we're definitely here on Red Eye Radio. We're anti-pro-death, just to make sure.
Yes, we're anti-pro-death. That's exactly it.
Anti-pro-death.
Right, that's like one of our top things.
Especially our own.
Right. Yes.
Just want to make that clear.
It's in my top 20.
It's really amazing that I'm less concerned about other people's death being, death than mine.
Yeah, no.
But there seems to be a huge self-interest there.
Yeah.
That my life is more important than others.
Yeah. With me, it's Eric first, family second, safety third. Yes. I think I've made that clear.
Safety is always third. Yeah.
Safety is always third. But it's amazing if you just throw that little morsel out there on social media. A buddy of mine has a pond, a private lake, and he's got these. He feeds his own catfish. He'll throw the like with farming catfish, he can feed them, you know, and he does. And for his grandkids, they, you know, it's great to see because the catfish just come to the surface. It's just like that process when you throw something out on social media like that. The liberal Karens that still exist that just rise to the surface and take that. How dare you? How dare you? People are still dying. Well, I think I'm pretty clear, and I'm anti-pro-death.
There are Karen masks now for Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Or at least they're appearing on social media.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the,
yeah.
The portraits of what they would look like. Some woman just screaming, you know, tears and blood on their face. Like, you know, makes like.
Yeah.
Be a Karen for Halloween.
Right. Okay. But what if you, like, if you, you know, if you're a grown up and you go to a party, if you dress up for a party, people actually do that. And you show up and there's an actual Karen there.
That's
what
right,
do you say to the actual Karen? Sorry, I didn't know you were going to dress up as the same.
Hey, look, you're a Karen. All right. So Musk going to buy Twitter.
Yeah.
How is he going to attempt to make the point? Number one, how is he going to monetize it in a different way? I guess I wonder. Number two, how is he really going to make it what he claims he wants?
I don't know that that long-term plan still exists. I'm not convinced that the move yesterday is anything beyond trying to get around the lawsuit and moving on with business in general. I'm not convinced that he's going to hang on to Twitter long-term. I'm just not.
Because you get very suspicious that the only reason he wants this deal to go through is he was losing, and he believes he was losing in court.
Yeah.
And he would have to buy it with a huge lawsuit attached to it.
Exactly. And because also possibly the terms handed down by the court. I'm just throwing this out there. I don't know that that's the case, but that's what you would fear, that, okay, this is going to end up a lot worse. You're going to have this, you're likely overpaying for it in the first place. And then beyond that, you're going to pay additional costs that come with this lawsuit that he's already paid for, you know, up to this point. Why go even further? You're not going to win, go through with the close. There's nothing that says you have to go through with your plan. His plan was, you know, I'll take it private and I'll change everything and, you know, monetize it differently and do everything differently and just change it. He may have lost that interest completely, and this could be simply, and I suspect until I hear otherwise or see otherwise, it demonstrated by Elon Musk, I suspect that this was a simple move of working around the court deal, and you get it. You maybe hold on to it for a minute, and then you don't have to keep it.
And the reason is because of the letter that his lawyer wrote.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the letter, okay, where's the, you know, the letter's one thing. Where's the other massive publicity saying, I have now decided to buy Twitter, and here's what it's going to be? Because you knew it would become a story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then where is the other promotion of what you're going to do?
Exactly.
Where's the marketing now that you've made the decision to buy it? If your purpose is still what the original intent was, you were marketing that big time. Now, they may do that today and in the coming
sure.
weeks. I would just expect it early on. But again, when you see that it's, okay, we'll buy Twitter for what the original price was, please don't sue us. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You start thinking, all right, what is his, you know, and as we know, he's quite vocal on social media. So where was the big horns and celebration and everything, parade?
Yeah, that's, again, what was missing for me and why it feels more like a move to get around the lawsuit, do away with that, and then you get into the ownership, you close on the deal. And then beyond that, you look at, but quite possibly selling the controlling interest that you own going in. There's nothing that forces him beyond the close to do anything.
And the only thing I've really seen is, and it was basically on social media, get ready for the layoffs. He's going to lay off.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've had some people on the left there. But what I noticed was the initial support that he had from, you know, conservatives and for people sick of censorship was huge. There was nothing yesterday.
Yeah, because he wasn't promoting anything that, you know, if he had come out and said, okay, I've decided that, number one, the court case isn't worth it. Number two, that my plan is a good plan. And again, you know, relayed that plan. He might have had some response. But I think at the end of it, you know, there has been this reassessment and we've compartmentalized, I think for a lot of conservatives, compartmentalized what social media is and what it isn't. Even since this whole thing started in that short time. Because there are, first of all, with the average household, the social media is not the thing. It's not the concern. Nobody cares whether, the world's richest guy buys Twitter, you know, and what they do with it. I think it is going to be, I think right now, social media is just going to have this, I think, a lull. I think it's plateaued in terms of priority in people's lives.
To me, it was like, okay, you announced it. Public doesn't care.
Yeah. I mean, the investors got onto it.
Judging by social media, but social media does give you an example of whether there's a tremendous amount of excitement even inside the conservative beltway or the liberal beltway, you know, or the I'm just labeling this right now, the the conservative social media beltway and the liberal social media beltway. You always will see if something they believe, if it hits a nerve, boom. I didn't see that happening except for the worry, not that even that Elon Musk would allow conservative voices not to be censored, because that's still huge with Democrats right now. But there didn't seem to be much on that on social media whatsoever. It was more that I saw was, oh, he's going to lay off. 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 And then I didn't see really much from conservatives at all on it, except, well, whatever, we'll see what he does.
Well, and I think, too, most people have already made the decision as to where the people who run social media, where they are and what and why they do what they do. Why they shut down conservative voices, why, you know, they act the way that they act. And I don't know that they need a full audit from new ownership at Twitter to reach a conclusion. I think they've already reached it. And so it's just a given. I think it's basically if Elon Musk goes in and he does a full audit as to, you know, how they operated, I think he's going to find what most people suspect. Yeah, there was bias there. It's clear there was bias there. Mm-hmm. There's evidence, and this purchase wasn't necessary to facilitate that knowing, that knowledge.
866-90-RED-EYE.
With diesel fuel at $5 per gallon in some places, it can really take a toll on your bottom line every time you fill up. To combat these prices, use a high-quality fuel additive that can not only improve your fuel economy on average to more than pay for the product, but also protect your truck. Look for a fuel additive that is fully formulated, like Hotshot's Secret Everyday Diesel Treatment. This 6-in-1 treatment turns your standard pump diesel into premium diesel by increasing cetane, lubricity, cleans fuel injectors, protects against moisture, and more. All of these benefits will increase your performance, increasing fuel economy, so that the savings will not only pay for the cost of the product, but also keep more money in your pocket. Hotshot's Secret EDT will increase fuel economy up to 3%. That's an extra 45 miles per tank, $37 worth of diesel, and a savings of 2 cents every mile on average. Protect your bottom line. Protect your truck. And stay on the road with a premium diesel treatment like Hotshot's Secret Everyday Diesel Treatment.
This report brought to you by Lubrifiner, engineering filters that are built to do more for heavy-duty fleets since 1996.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll-free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Crowley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, the big economic news already today probably will be how much OPEC decides to cut, because it could be anywhere between 1 to 2 million barrels a day. And I guess oil prices in general went up 3% yesterday, just anticipating it.
Yeah.
And reading some experts saying, look, OPEC is going to addicted to triple-digit oil. They want the price of oil higher. And they know they can do it because they know the U.S. and Europe can't make it up because of the policies. The energy and economic and national security slow suicide that the Democrats wish to have in this country. That's not rhetoric. It's what they want. When they want high gasoline prices, when they want it through the roof, when they wish to shut down domestic production, what they're saying is, we still need the oil. We will give it to the Middle East. Think about this. How Democrats complained for decades about oil from the Middle East. Now it is their preferred way for us to get our fossil fuels, to take American cash and give it to OPEC and Middle Eastern countries. Wow. And as you pointed out, half of the Russian imports in this country go to the West Coast, and a significant portion to California.
And Russia, even though they've been cut off to some extent, is still a member of OPEC Plus.
Yep.
And so, you know, a couple of things. You look at the statements or promises that OPEC and OPEC Plus have made in the past, and then what they follow through with. And the fact of the matter is right now, they know, OPEC knows, that they've got the U.S. and they've got them by the throat, because the U.S. isn't going to ramp up production because this administration is not going to allow it. In fact, they put into place policies that will do and have done just the opposite. So they can demonstrate their power here. And that is a show of power that OPEC loves to demonstrate, which has me thinking that if, you know, again, they promise a production cut, they'll actually follow through with it this time. Often they don't, because they don't want to, again, you know, they don't want to slow down production too much. It's that balance that you play. But they know now, right now especially, with this administration in power, that they have control of the spigot, especially in the wake of Biden going over and asking the Saudis to ramp up production. What was that, a couple of months ago? And they know the U.S. is begging for them to do something, and OPEC's going, yawn.
And you hear what the White House said yesterday. No, he didn't go to the trip for that.
Yeah, right. Sure he did.
it's like just take the opposite opinion. But when you think about it, all of this, for how many decades? I'm old enough to remember how many decades we were furious at the Middle East. We can never allow that to happen in this country.
Right.
We need to figure out what to do, but we just didn't have or weren't able to get. We didn't have the technology to go after all the natural sources that we have here, natural energy sources in this country. Mm-hmm. We now do.
Right.
Back then, there was an excuse. We don't have the technology. Now we have the technology. It's proven we can produce it. And the Biden administration is doing everything so that we send American dollars to OPEC nations and Middle Eastern nations for our energy. Why?
Gary McNamara and Eric Harley taking your calls. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. In other news, by the way, gasoline prices did go up 2.5 cents, roughly 2.5 cents from yesterday in just a day. Now with OPEC going to make this cut, how rapidly will they escalate? It was already expected that they would, but how fast will they? When will they announce? When will the cuts begin? And I can see if they put the cuts through and gasoline starts going up. You know what the Democratic narrative is going to be? OPEC wants the Republicans to win. OPEC is a friend of Republicans. Expect that. I don't know who's going to be the first to do that. Probably Karine Jean-Pierre will be.
Yeah. As you already know, and thank you for asking that question. As you already know, OPEC is just another way of saying GOP.
You know, did you see her, yesterday answering the questions, her head, every question, her head was down and it was scanning. They must have the binders now beneath that wall where you can't actually see the binders.
No, they did. They lowered the
table inside of it.
The tabletop of the podium down because her, thumbing through the pages just looked horrible. Now, it doesn't look any better now that she's just looking down all the time.
She's looking down and her head's moving slightly like she's scanning for something.
Yeah.
It's so terrible. And it's almost every single question. That's the thing that's really amazing. But in some of the other stats that came out yesterday, U.S. job openings unexpectedly dropped in August to the lowest level in over a year. Labor Department said Tuesday there were 10.1 million job openings in August, a major decline from the previous month's revised reading of 11.17. Still, again, it's way over what the last record was. The highest on record before COVID was 7.7 million.
Right. Yeah.
So it's still way over. I don't find that they say unexpected. I'm like, well, why? August is when we had that rate cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's when we had bad inflation news again. Mm-hmm. I could see there might have been job openings and companies just said, nope, don't want to fill it now. Let's wait. Let's wait to see. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Right.
I'm still not surprised by that. When you look at, but you see, I see the stock futures are down pretty heavily this morning. When I just checked it, the Dow was down over 200. I don't know if it's gone up or what. But
down 274.
Okay, 278 I'm looking at here. So mm-hmm. whatever. So as we see, it might soon be below 30,000 when we wake up again. This has to be all on the fact of they expect. Because that's the one thing. If gasoline prices go back up and then natural gas skyrockets, fuel oil skyrockets here, as it's expected to do for the winter heating season, that makes it so any minor inroads you may have thought you made with the success in reducing the rate of growth of inflation goes right out the window.
Yeah, right. Well, and now you've got this global call on the central banks, including the Fed here in the U.S., to stop with the U.S. or stop with the rate hikes. Because everybody sees it for, where it's headed. You keep doing the rate hikes. You keep doing the rate hikes. And it made me wonder, I don't know, at the November 2nd meeting, which is the next Fed meeting, I haven't gathered the consensus of where people believe they'll go. Half point, three quarters of a point, or do they pause? No rate increase for the moment, days before the midterm.
It's abstract at that point.
Well, it doesn't connect to the it might send a message to the market, and that's temporary. it doesn't change ultimately what we're dealing with, because much of what we're seeing right now in the slowdown and the change in spending habits, Wall Street Journal pointed this out last week, that people are changing their spending habits in a big way based on inflation. And then you get into the fear of recession. Well, an inflation-driven recession on top of the increase in the rates, they're not going to lower the rates. So let's say they're neutral November 2nd and they don't raise the rates. Well, the impact on the raises that they put in so far this year is still going to keep going while you still have inflation and prices not coming down. Well, this is what the consumer is dealing with, and it does nothing. I mean, it doesn't matter where they go on the second.
But here's the point. I don't know if it does it to the stock market, because I don't know if anybody buys it. If the Fed comes out and doesn't raise rates, the stock market's going to say, especially if the inflation report, you know, is anywhere near 7%, that they don't want to fight inflation. Therefore, we're going to have these price increases are going to last longer. I can see the stock market going the other way.
It's something we talked about last time, and that is they're in this conundrum of too little, too late. So if they would have gone a full point last time at the last meeting, then the market would say, oh, my gosh, they really want to slow the economy down. If they had gone too little, it would be, well, they're not serious about inflation.
Do you fear, as an investor or a company, fear a recession more than uncontrolled inflation? I fear inflation more than a recession, because when you hit a recession in these times, and that's just understanding the history of what we go through. We go through, this is how it happens every time when you have long-term inflation, massive government spending, massive debt. This time, insane Fed policies on interest rates and not doing anything about it. The government spending money, the psychological thing of government spending money to save people, the people are all for it until it causes massive inflation. And as I said, now the people want, what do the people want this November? The people want inflation gone, but the spending to magically keep up.
Mm-hmm. As long as it doesn't affect anybody.
As long as it doesn't affect anybody, then inflation, then spending is okay. Now that we've seen the consequences of spending, oh no, get rid of the inflation, but don't cut back on the spending, though. We can't do that. We need, what politician can throw some magic in? Where's Obama? He sold us magic. Get Obama back. We need a magician here.
Yeah, you need David Blaine. But ultimately, in the either or scenario, inflation is certainly a much greater concern. But what you fear, if you're going to choose, or if you're going to go the either or route, you don't want the inflation. Recession is better than inflation. But the problem is that now you look at the combination of both, where the Fed isn't going to get on top of the rates, of the inflation rate with the interest rates. And so if they go too slow at the next meeting, or if they go too heavy, either way, you're sending a negative message, depending on who you're talking to on Wall Street.
One of the reasons that I believe core inflation is going to be a consistent problem is because even though gasoline prices came down, diesel prices were still through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to what gasoline came down, diesel didn't come down. There's a real problem there because of the, especially if we have a cold winter, where you're going to see the prices of things like that skyrocket. If you have high gasoline prices, high fuel oil prices, high diesel prices where they keep going up and up and up and up, that goes through all the chain of every product that uses petroleum, raises the cost of every product that uses petroleum, raises the cost of shipping. And so the policy of the, and then you've got the Democrats out there in the administration saying, buy an electric vehicle, buy, as the idiot from the representative, I forgot where he was from yesterday, get a heat pump.
Uh-huh.
You know, get solar panels, get, you know, get a, spend $20,000 on solar panels and we'll give you $5,000 off. Well, all you're doing is increasing the cost of everything for me, including electricity, and that inflation is going to happen now. You can give me a credit, but that, but still, that's going to be a huge, that's going to be a huge amount of money that is spent that only substitutes with higher prices for what you'd be paying for electricity, even at its high cost each and every month because of the initial outgo of that. So you're still spending, and people aren't going to do it. That's not going to happen to begin with. That's not going to happen. But I sit there and I just shake my head with the insanity. And it's just, it keeps going and going and going, and they don't stop. Nobody has recognized in the administration that inflation and energy prices are going to kill us.
Yeah.
They haven't even acknowledged that there's a problem.
No. No. And you know, that's the ultimate problem that we have here, and that is the very real possibility of a slow-burning recession and inflation not being tamed at the same time.
And then you see, you know, we've talked about how the debt instruments, treasury bills, bonds, whatever, we see their interest rates going way, way up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these are 60 times. Because remember, interest rates were nothing. They were point, you know, we looked at treasury bills last year, you know, 0.01, 0.02. And now, I think it was a three-month treasury bill, yesterday was at 3.34%. It's like 60 times greater. You look at it, 30 times, 40, depending on what, you know, bill you buy. Wait, those are all interest that has to be paid over the next couple of years, which means it will cut into programs, or you borrow more money because you can't back you can't back out on those programs, and also you can't raise taxes. So you just keep going. You're in this endless, insane cycle of government spending, which keeps driving the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, nah, we don't hear any of that. At least the public recognizes that spending causes inflation. My question is, does the public believe that you can still have massive spending and no inflation? Is that the cure that they're looking for? Well, if they are, then we're all waiting for the tooth fairy to put something under our pillow or Santa Claus to show up at our door with free stuff.
Well, that's it.
Not reality.
It isn't reality, and at some point, there is a break. The threshold in terms of consumer spending and inflation, we've already crossed that threshold, but an all-out break of, again, an inflation-driven recession, which is also pushed along by the increase in interest rates, being a more long-term recession. You have more and more CEOs now saying, oh, yeah, no, we've totally cut our forecast for 23. Yeah, it's not good. And you've had a couple of good days on the market, a bounce back from what the losses were at the end of September, but many saying, okay, we're still not in great territory in terms of the economy. That's where we are, and this is all man-made.
And when I see, I remember it. I'm old enough to remember how long inflation lasted in the 70s and early 80s,
yep.
Year after year after
yep.
year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm afraid here. I don't want the United
right.
States to go through that again.
Right.
And they don't care.
Right.
866-98-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866 90 Red Eye. Well, Bob Alinsky is back. We played some audio earlier, and he makes the greatest point. They wanted verification. I would have verified the Hunter laptop story within 5 minutes if anyone from Facebook or Twitter reached out, he said yesterday.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I just want to come out to let everybody know, it's, you know, 2 years later, 2 year anniversary of when he came out the first time.
Crazy that it's been 2 years.
The FBI has never contacted him since that interview.
Yeah, of course.
Never been back with him
right,
at all.
Right.
And the I think the most important point that he brought up is that the whole story of Zuckerberg and talking to the FBI and the fact that they used the word dump.
Right.
Because dump means it was the laptop. They had it.
Right.
They knew that's what it was.
Right.
Is his allegation.
Right. It's a collection of data. It's not a news story.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you want in case you can't listen overnight for some horrible reason. You can't listen to one of our great radio stations, and you can listen right there on your phone. Well, we're getting to October, which means boom. You know, we earlier talked about what's going on, you know, the abortion allegation against Walker, some of the allegations against Warnock. You know, for injuring a woman, whether that was domestic abuse or not, those, you know, allegations coming up. And then you've got Fetterman in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you knew this ad was going to come up. And in case, just to give you a little background, in 2013, the city that Fetterman was mayor of, Braddock Police, responded to reports of gunshot in the area near his home. According to Fetterman, he was outside in his yard with his four-year-old son at the time. In a 2022 campaign video about gun violence, the lieutenant governor said he thought the gunshots came from a direction of a nearby school and was worried about another attack like the Sandy Hook Elementary massacre. He saw a jogger, Christopher Myaris, running by in the dark, or running by in dark clothes and a face mask, and feared he could be responsible. So Mr. Fetterman grabbed his shotgun, chased the man in his truck, and detained him until the police could arrive. I realized I could never forgive myself if I didn't do anything, Mr. Fetterman said in the video. The jogger was found to be unarmed, according to police reports. Mr. Fetterman told a local news outlet in 2013, quote, "I believe I did the right thing, but I may have broken the law in the course of it. I'm certainly not above the law." Myaris, who is black, has a very different version of the events. In his telling, Mr. Fetterman chased after him and threatened him with fatal violence because of his race. He told the Philadelphia Inquirer in a 2021 letter that the lieutenant governor lied about everything in regards to the 2013 event. Mayor said the gunshots the mayor heard were just kids firing off bottle rockets. Fetterman says Mayaris invented that detail. Then he wrote, "He knew my race. His gun was aimed at my chest." Mr. Fetterman has said that because Mayaris's face mask, he wasn't aware of the man's race. Nonetheless, Mayaris, who never pressed any charges or filed a complaint against Mr. Fetterman, said in a letter that it is inhumane to believe one mistake should define a man's life, and that the lieutenant governor has his support, even though he criticizes him. All right. Mm. So that's where you are right there. Now, it's been used by both people on the left and the right to criticize him. You knew this was going to become part of the campaign. And here is an ad that was put together by a Pennsylvania PAC. Here we go. Here it is. All right.
I may have broken the law. I may have broken the law.
That's what John Fetterman said after chasing down an unarmed, innocent black man and held him at gunpoint.
I may have broken the law.
Now this guy's running for Senate. You can't make that shit up. He ought to be in jail. Why did John Fetterman see a black man and do that? He knows why, and our community does too.
RGC Victory Fund is responsible for the content of this ad.
There you go. And there's a couple of ads. That's just one of the ads. That's the one with the cursing where they have a very, very quick bleep on that, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quick bleep.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how much weight it carries by itself, but it's not a positive based on the Fetterman campaign having to walk back a number of things in recent days and weeks. And then again, the performance or maybe lack thereof on the campaign trail. And the questions about his illness, his stroke. I think the collective starts to weigh heavy because we're getting down to the wire. That's the way these things work. And the people that are on the fence, you know, they're going to have to decide whether or not they see Fetterman as the guy. We've talked about how in the past we've, and I still believe to some extent, Oz is not a great candidate. We both believe that in recent weeks he has been better. But now this is when the gloves come off, and whether it's Pennsylvania and this Senate race, or the gloves coming off with Walker's son in Georgia and the allegations also with Warnock. All of these things, you know, this is October, right? Mm-hmm. And the question is, how much weight does anyone put on any of these allegations? I think right now, and it's impossible to know, but with Walker, I don't know that it goes very far with his base in Georgia. The question would be with independents. And do they believe him or not? And how much weight do they put into that based on something that he may have done in his past that violates their moral standards? Or are they willing to forgive that and say, yeah, we still want him. We need the count in the Senate. This is really what it comes down to. I mean, this is, and it sounds oversimplistic, but, you know, we're talking about a couple of seats here or there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also talking about, you know, what's going to happen with, you know, the House, but in the Senate, many people might be willing to hold their nose on a number of things on both sides and say, yeah, we still need the head count.
Well, look, there comes to a point when people believe that a campaign has gotten so dirty where if they don't know where to believe, yet that candidate supports them on the issues, that mm-hmm. it's not going to stop them from voting for the issue. And mm-hmm. I don't know where the Walker thing's going to end up. I know he went on, I think it was on Fox News, last night. He has denied it without question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question has come up. I forgot who wrote it. National Review wrote an article stating, well, if he did it, he should just come clean. Because if he came clean and said, if it came out, he said, yep, that's what I did back then. It was a mistake. I'm now pro-life, that he would be embraced by the pro-life movement. If it is a lie, there may be some that might be peeled off. But then again, as you put it very simply, because a lot of these things are simple in many people's minds. It's not hard. Okay, he did that back in, what was that, 2009?
2009.
Let's say you sort of say, well, okay, was that the check? Was that a real check that they're showing there? Did he really pay her $700? Now he said, well, I give a lot of people money, but I have no idea who she is. That was bad.
Right.
From Walker, that was tough. I don't believe that. You know, I can see many people saying that. I don't believe that. I give money to many people, and I forget who I gave money to. That might be the case. I don't know. But I'm just saying what passes people's, you know, stink test. Now, others might say, okay, look, he might have done it back then, but where is he now in the Senate? Where is he going to be? Absolutely pro-life. That's what I have to put forward. Who's going to be pro-life, not what he did in the past.
Right.
And I'm still not sure, you know, and this may be because people start voting. When do they start voting? We're coming up. It's like, 17, 18 days before the election, mm-hmm. you start voting in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so.
And you touched on a couple of things there. So if it is about whether or not he's pro-life now for them, then they could look at that and go, okay, I believe that's the way he'll behave as a senator and I'll act accordingly and support him. But if they believe that because of the cover-up, not necessarily the crime, not actual crime, but the accusation, then it becomes a more recent concern. In other words, okay, I don't buy that he's telling me the truth. And if he came clean, like you said, the suggestion that if he were to come clean and say, look, yes, I did this. And I am staunchly pro-life now. That clearly was a mistake that I have to live with for the rest of my life. And that would be something where you could look at it and go, okay, if he's saying that, he's not, you know, he's telling me the truth. But if they believe he's lying about this, the lies are happening now. They're happening in 22. And if they believe he's not going to be truthful with them and honest with them, that's a problem. And that's where they lose confidence.
Or if you're willing to vote Republican because of everything, mm-hmm. You look at everything, inflation.
And a simple headcount.
Inflation, yeah. Critical race theory, mm-hmm. liberal transgender activist movement. And you know that this person is going to promote all of those. And especially with inflation hitting you every single day, do you get that story, go, well, I don't care. He's pro-life now. Boom. Everything else is hitting. Is it the media is focusing on it like they focused on abortion is going to change this election, where it hasn't so far? Mm-hmm. Is this more of the media narrative being driven forward that this is the reason that Walker's going to lose, hoping that he's going to lose, you know, through this? But the average person out there voting, the vast majority are like, there's too many other problems. Everything's falling apart. The guy's pro-life now. Let it go. Move on. Maybe he is lying because he's ashamed of himself. He can't admit it because it's very tough. It sits on your conscience. I don't know. We're throwing out all the different possibilities. But abortion was like number 10 of the issues that exist out there. And mm-hmm. We did make a point when we say, yeah, but he's lying now about this. But with the number of lies that we hear now, like Warnock isn't lying. Is it almost as if, look, okay, it's a lie because he's ashamed of himself. Boom, he's pro-life now. He is going to vote with the Republicans, we believe, on all the major conservative issues and especially help to stop inflation, and he gets it. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, and it could be that including the scandals, are obscured for a number of people because they look at it and say, I need to support the party as a whole, the collective, to make sure that we block the Biden administration, that we stop with the spending, that we do everything within the power to send the message, whatever it is, and that Walker is just one more player in fulfilling that, you know, that role, that ultimate goal of having the Republicans in charge of both the Senate and the House.
And sometimes October surprises just fail. Nah, that's a dirty trick at the last second. Not going to change my mind, just not going to change it.
Right. No, there's, you know, that's the one thing, too, is that I think with the advent of social media, that people take more ownership in a number of things. If they are outwardly vocal, if they demonstrate and put their opinions out there on social media, like a lot of people do, even if they're just talking with family and friends and having more conversations and, you know, engaging a little heavier, that ownership comes with a sense of pride, and you're probably looking at it going, yeah, well, I still believe in the overall message. They all have their flaws. Well, they all lie. Oh, they all have something in their past. And you kind of excuse it away. Because what you don't want is to have to say, well, yeah, I was really wrong about that person. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of that that goes on right now. We issue opinion everywhere. Political opinion is everywhere you turn. And so people take ownership in that, and with that ownership comes pride, and they might just look at it and go, no, I still support the Republicans over the Democrats or vice versa, whatever it is, and I'm not going to change my mind. So I do wonder what, I mean, barring a crime or something, right, that somebody is accused of doing, breaking news at the last minute, that kind of revelation, barring something like that, the typical October surprises may not have the same impact.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Making it safer for visitors to the nation's 154 national forests and
improving the visitor experience.
Those are the goals of a new project being funded with $37 million from the infrastructure law. Gordy Bloom directs recreational programs for the U.S. Forest Service. He says with years of having to use maintenance and other monies to pay for firefighting, and with record crowds still visiting national forests,
there are obviously impacts to some of our facilities, our infrastructure,
such as hiking trails being washed out or closed, campgrounds closed or with reduced services and such. But Bloom says with this new funding, the Forest Service is compiling a big list of possible projects and trying to determine
what are those most pressing needs in terms of safety, or what are those infrastructure needs that are most impacting the visitor experience.
Bloom says that list of selected projects should be final by the end of the year. Work on some of those could begin then immediately. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, Tony Bobulinski makes an appearance on Fox News, who has some audio coming up. Tony Bobulinski, again, after the New York Post story, was the first person to come aboard and say, I got the evidence. I'm a witness to everything that Biden did. Biden is the guy who got, Joe Biden is the person who got 10% off all the family business. They were in illegal enterprises and everything else, and the FBI interviewed him, never contacted him again. He's never, as he said early on when everybody was, well, we can't verify the story, we can't verify it. He said, I can. And nobody wanted, Facebook didn't want to talk to him. Twitter didn't want to talk to him. And it's really interesting because when you look at somebody like Bobulinski, you think about that. If it was the other side and this witness existed and it was against Donald Trump, not only would everybody interview him, but Fox would interview him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The media won't touch Tony Bobulinski. Why?
No.
Nobody's saying that he's wrong. You don't hear anybody criticizing him.
Right.
They just won't interview him. Why? They're scared to death. Well, we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. A couple of things dealing with your economy. OPEC supposed to cut. That's what people think. 1 to 2 million, announced 1 to 2 million barrel a day cut in oil prices. A couple of analysts said they want triple digit gas prices again, which, I mean, for a barrel of oil. They want a barrel of oil above $100. Gas prices up overnight, $0.03 a gallon. a lot of people now covering on the national scene because the local stations have been covering it. Gas prices highest ever in
California.
In California, mm-hmm. Nevada, second highest, right? Mm-hmm. Second highest prices.
Yep.
Arizona, high gas prices. Many of these states we had talked about earlier this week and more coverage of different news articles that we read you during the show talking about 30, 40 cent increases just in the last week.
Right.
And how it might affect the election or bring back, reiterate to voters and say, you got to understand, this is what they want. This is actually what they want. Democrats want high, extremely high energy prices.
Right. Yeah, this doesn't work in the Democrats' favor at all. The timing, as this is happening in October and the weeks leading up to the election, is really bad for them because they can't deny it. Republicans need to stay on it. This is all by design, and Democrats want these high prices.
Even ask about the extra E. Call in during the show. 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, Tony Bob Ulinski is back, a former, actually, employee, wasn't he? He was an employee of Hunter Biden. Mm-hmm. Worked for his company, but he worked for Hunter Biden. And when the New York Post laptop story came out late in the campaign in 2020, as you remember the censoring by Twitter and Facebook and the complete media blackout on that story, except really for Fox News and other conservative outlets and really conservative talk radio, just a blackout on it. And Bob Ulinski came forward and did an interview and said, "Wait a minute, I'm the guy." And he said everybody knew from the Post story that he was the guy to call. And he never heard from Twitter. He could have verified everything.
Yep.
He never heard from Twitter, never heard from Facebook, never heard from anybody else in the media concerning the fact that he was a witness to this. Now, you reverse it and you say, we'll use Bush instead, okay?
I appreciate being part of the conversation.
Right. But if a story like this came out of a major newspaper mm-hmm. and said this laptop, you know, was left by Bush's daughter.
Jenna. Well, I'll pick Jenna.
Jenna. Okay. Jenna. Yeah, right. That Jenna had this and there was possible concerns of influence peddling to the White House. Number one, they would have ran the story and everybody knows it.
Of course.
Everybody would run Twitter, Facebook, whatever. If a Bob Ulinski came forward and said, "I'm your witness," even Fox News and Newsmax and conservative talk radio would have interviewed him. It might have been more adversarial, mm-hmm. but they would have interviewed him. How you know there's a problem here is the fact that the media won't cover it. If the liberal media thought they had an angle, or after 2 years thought that they could demonize Bob Ulinski in any way, they would. You notice they don't.
Right.
And there are two things that have happened, two things that are unprecedented, I believe, in American history that has been covered up by the media, which shows that they're not just biased, but they're political activists. One is the continuing story, as we have seen, of what the Hillary campaign did to the Trump campaign in 2020 and how everything, because think about this. It's when I tell this to people, most people don't know it. It's been squashed on so much. Well, didn't Trump collude? No, here's what happened. And then you explain to them the two enterprises created by the Hillary campaign and the transferring of money to make up stories and lies about Trump and then attempt to justify it and sell it to law enforcement so they'd start an investigation of the Trump campaign and then either get a warrant or by that lie go to the media with the lie, and when they report it, say, see what Trump's doing from a lie that they actually created. There has not been a greater political dirty trick in the history of United States politics, and I bet you the majority of Americans could not tell you what I just told you right now.
Right.
Because it's been hidden. It's been hidden by the media. They just won't report on it. Now, you notice nobody has ever said and come out and said what the allegations are against Hillary are false.
No.
New York Times hasn't done it.
No.
No media has done it. They just basically ignore the story as if it just doesn't exist. And the same here with this story. Not that it didn't get out. But really, in the mainstream media, it's about censorship. And it's about the fact that, you know, they talk about the fact that the conservatives need to be censored because of disinformation. Yet the biggest, the two of the biggest stories that were censored because they were afraid they would be disinformation, one ended up being 100% true, and the other is now viewed as a viable theory, with the other theory that COVID came naturally or COVID came from a lab. Now, all are accepted as legitimate possibilities, yet they were censored. And so Bob Ulinski was asked, he was on with Tucker Carlson, he was asked, why did you come forward now?
I'm coming out now because American people still are being lied to about the facts, right? Nothing's been done. They're still thinking, oh, that deal never happened, or, you know, Hunter Biden was a troubled child. They're not aware of the tens of millions of dollars, the thousands of, you know, pages of documentation and the facts. The DOJ is claiming they had to couch this. They can't do anything near an election. I don't want to be sitting here in December and they actually indict Hunter Biden. And then the American people are like, why weren't we made aware of those facts? This is crazy. I would have changed my vote for that congressman or that senator or that governor or that attorney general. So that's why I'm coming out now. Why?
So when you, you know, you look at this case, we've always said this is not about Hunter Biden. It's about Joe Biden. Hunter Biden's not president of the United States. Joe Biden is.
Right.
It's about the now president influence peddling and making money while he was vice president by using his son and using his son as a conduit for countries and unfriendly countries to have an in to the White House while he was vice president, and then continuing afterwards in case he became president of the United States, that they would keep paying Joe money and the family money to enrich the family and also enrich Joe Biden. Now, one of the key factors here is the fact that the president himself still states that he had no knowledge of any of Hunter Biden's business dealings. Every Democrat knows that's a lie. Why? Because the voicemail exists.
Well, and that was really the proverbial nail in the proverbial coffin. You really can't get around that. This lie that he's been telling, that he didn't know anything. Yeah, you did. That's proof that you were fully aware of it. So then the question becomes, why would you lie about, you know, and that's the initial lie that they're still telling. He didn't know, or I didn't know anything about my son's businesses.
And they get into talking about that. I got this one audio cut I want to play here. They actually got into the specifics of that.
No, this is from the sitting president of the United States. This is from Joe Biden to his son, Hunter.
Hey, Palace Dad, it's 8:15 on Wednesday night. If you get a chance, give me a call. Nothing urgent. Just want to talk to you. I thought the article, at least the thing on online, this is going to be printed tomorrow in the Times, was good. I think it's clear. And anyway, if you get a chance, give me a call. I love you.
I mean, that's it.
That's staggering. The sitting president of the United States. But that's Joe Biden in his own voice telling the American people, I was always well aware of the business ventures my family was involved in. So much so I could tell my son I read a detailed article that has 50 facts in it. Imagine just sitting in a room with national security and the intel agencies with that article, talking about corruption, talking about China, talking about the Chinese Communist Party, the Liberation Army of China. Joe Biden is saying, I read that article and you're in the clear, Hunter. And he leaves that voicemail.
And that's how he knows that he lied, because that's the end right there. Why did you lie? You claim you didn't know about his business ventures. You know everything about it. And that voicemail tells us that. And everybody knows it. But as a couple of things here, as he said, after he did the initial FBI interview, they've never contacted him in 2 years, ever. Nobody from the media, from Facebook, Twitter.
And if you're leftist media, wouldn't you approach him and want to basically discredit him? Didn't even try that.
Not if you can't. Not if that's you view problem. It as being so credible that you can. And that's the keys of understanding liberalism. If they don't attack, it means they can't.
Now think of the vast difference. And there is a huge difference in how BuzzFeed approached the dossier in January of 2017. They even said, they even posted, yeah, we can't really confirm that any of this is true. And then the media beyond that jumped off of the BuzzFeed article on that, including CNN. In fact, that's where Jim Acosta started to make his name at CNN, asking questions about the BuzzFeed article, which, again, they put out themselves and said, yeah, we don't even know if it's true, and the media was on it. You've got something like this on the Hunter Biden laptop, and they won't touch it.
And then he talks about the interview that Zuckerberg did with Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, he was the Bobby Linsky, by the Navy veteran, former head of Sinohawk Holdings, which he described as a partnership between the Chinese energy conglomerate and two Biden family members. He said that the words used by Zuckerberg from his own sit down with Joe Rogan, he explained how it allegedly showed the FBI must have known how damaging his information on the Biden family was to the then candidate. Zuckerberg told Rogan early this year that FBI officials came to Facebook executives and warned them that there was a lot of Russia propaganda in the 2016 election, and be on notice, quote, there's about to be some kind of dump that's similar to that, so be vigilant. And as Bob Ulinski said, the key word is Zuckerberg using dump rather than article or report. It said he believes that meant the FBI suggested as much to Facebook, while the agents may not have used that exact same term. That's what the FBI apparently, that's the term Zuckerberg used, a dump, which means they were talking the laptop.
Yep, that's
which they had possession of
exactly
at that time.
That's not, hey, there's a news story that's coming out.
So his point is that's another dot connecting the FBI to having the laptop, knowing what's on it, and knowing that it's so dangerous, and they knew it wasn't propaganda, and telling Facebook, Twitter, you know, watch out for this, watch out for this, watch out for it. And when it came out, boom. And again, Zuckerberg used the word dump. Now, has Zuckerberg come out and corrected that, or will he today?
I guess we'll see.
So, yeah, when you look at this, when you look at that, by the way, the Republicans at the House, they're going to be all over this.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I did see the RCP averages, 219 for Republicans already, without any of the 34 possible contested seats.
Hmm.
So they already have, the RCP already has the Republicans taking the House. They're going to be on this. You know, Biden thinks, oh, I'm going to run in 2024 again. If you said that to Al Sharpton.
If the GOP gets the Senate, you're going to have, in fact, a lot going on with hearings.
Oh, you have more. My gosh, the connected dots that you have here, compare what they had on Trump in impeachment to what they have with Biden
right
now.
Right. Oh, my
gosh. It's not even close. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Quickly, national debt tops $31 trillion. In other news, Loretta Lynn, the great country singer, dead at age 90. Just a great singer. And Aaron Judge hits his 62nd home run.
Mm.
Tops ever in the American League.
Yeah.
Breaks Roger Maris's record and does it 12 miles from me.
Yeah.
Did it in Texas. So
Loretta Lynn left me an adorable voicemail one time. We were doing a surprise 30th anniversary for the original host of our program, Bill Mack, back in the day. This was in 99. Ooh, that's how long that goes back. And she left me a voicemail because we were trying to set up the surprise where she would call in. And, you know, Eric, honey, this is Loretta Lynn. I'm supposed to call in to Bill's anniversary show, and I just need to know when. Okay, hun, let me know. Bye. And it was just, and I listened to that thing probably 100 times. I tried to find a way to get it onto back then a cassette or to tape to preserve it, and I wasn't able to do that. But she was so generous, and of course, when she called in, just adorable because she was friends with Bill. She knew him very well, but you think about it hit me yesterday. How great Sissy Spacek was in the role in the movie.
Yeah, that was good.
Because you know, if Sissy Spacek had been just like her naturally, then it would have been, okay, she was perfect for the role. But, I mean, she just transformed into her in that movie. Mm-hmm. But Loretta Lynn was just a gem of a person, and what a performer.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.